Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to Wrestling Chat Radio.
Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome once again to another edition of Wrestle Chat Radio's Raw Report. Marcus King coming to you live from the SBTV studios right here in New York. And for the next hour, we will be discussing last night's Monday Night Raw at 347-215-8486. 347-215-8486, if you'd like to get in on our conversation. Of course, as always, you can hit us up in the chat room, and we'll take your questions, your comments, and your opinions there as well. Well, folks, this was a rather interesting Monday Night Raw. It started out with a bang, to be quite honest, but it almost didn't. From what we're being told, Vince McMahon himself rewrote the beginning of Monday Night Raw. The beginning of Monday Night Raw was, in fact, scheduled to be an open challenge match answered by The Miz. And that has changed, obviously. Vince McMahon wanted the Finn Balor spot to be inserted in there. I think it was always going to be in there. It was going to be after the match or whatever. But he wanted it for that whole segment. Truthfully, I think it was a good decision. But I have a little bit of a problem with the open challenge. I'll tell you why I have a problem with the open challenge. How is it that you have people competing on a regular basis for a spot in a match where you can potentially get a briefcase that will allow you to turn in that briefcase or the contract in it for a title shot at any time, and there are six or seven people willing to kill themselves for it? However, when the champion actually comes right on out and says, I'll defend against anybody, only The Miz is going to answer that challenge? There's nobody else in that locker room that's like, oh, well, I don't have to wait for my title shot. How come Finn Balor didn't answer? Then he'd have two shots. How come Dominic Mysterio didn't answer it? How come any number of people didn't answer it? Doesn't make any sense. It doesn't make any sense that only The Miz would answer that challenge, or that somehow, how open is the challenge? I mean, when do you have to answer it? The minute it's announced, The Miz runs over and says, put my name on the top of the list, piece of paper, nobody else can do it now. I was the first here. Well, that's not an open challenge, because that means the champion clearly knows who he's defending against. So I don't understand the rules to this open challenge, and I don't understand why almost every time we have an open challenge, it's someone down the line, mid-card type thing, where there's no possible way they're going to win. I don't understand why top contenders wouldn't want that shot. Right? Everybody's supposed to want the title. Everybody's supposed to want to. My God, if you're Brock Lesnar, right, and you hear that last week, you say, well, I'm flying there this week. I'll answer that challenge. I get a free title shot? How come? How come only The Miz? So I don't like that because I don't think it's really logical. So in my opinion, we probably were better off with this beginning that we got. It's added a little bit of interest to the Finn Balor match. It's made it appear as though Finn Balor is centrally focused on taking this belt away from the person who sidelined him with an injury so many years ago. There is a built-in story there. I don't think Finn Balor has any shot at all to win. But there is a story there, and you know, look, is it better than The Miz taking on Seth Rollins and then having Finn Balor interfere and probably Tommaso Ciampa interfere? Yeah, you know, I guess it is. So not every time that Vince rewrites the script, Mike, is it in a negative way.
Right, and that's the thing. And here's the other thing. I mean, you know, where's the, if you're going to have somebody show up, where's Bobby Lashley? You know, there's a bunch of names that you could have put there. If you want to keep this open challenging, there was a bunch of names that you could have put there that would have made all the sense in the world. You know, now, what we got, I like, and what we got, the fact of the matter is, we knew eventually that they were going to do the whole thing with the Miz and Ciampa and that. So we got that, right? So, and that's going to happen, right? That happened, and it's probably going to happen again. And Ciampa came back as a face and all that stuff, but that's not the point. The point is, you know, like you said, we over the year, over the past few years, we've talked about, well, Vince McMahon is losing and he's getting senile in his old age. He can't book anymore, right? You know, he doesn't know what he's doing. Well, obviously he knew what he was doing this time.
Yeah, this time it worked out a lot better. I just don't see the point in going through a Seth Rollins versus The Miz match. No one thinks The Miz is winning. No one see, the logic would be Finn Balor would say, I not only will accept that match, but if I think I really can't win, my goal isn't even to win. My goal is just to hurt him. So he's not going to be able to go into Money in the Bank 100%, which is what he did anyway, but why not take the title shot then? Why have it be a sneak attack? If you could injure Seth Rollins to the point you just did, then pin him and be the champion. Right? If you could do that, then why not answer the challenge? And tell the Miz, no, I'm answering the challenge. Ring the bell. I've got him hurt. He can't even walk. Right? That's why this doesn't make any sense, Todd. And if you're going to have an open challenge, it should always be somebody, you know, at the top of the card, because that's who would normally answer these challenges.
Well, you're absolutely right, Gil. Like you said, I just don't like how they open it, too. And, you know, this open and challenge thing with the bottom of the card or the lower mid-card status of the WWE superstars on these open challenge things, and it just don't always work out.
No, Mike, if you're going to do an open challenge, I think they should just pick the name out of random, you know, even if it's not really random, even if, you know, every slip of paper says the same name or whatever, it doesn't matter. You can rig it, but make it look as though it's totally random, because then at least it makes sense.
I mean, no, they didn't do this when Cena was the U.S. champion, right? Anybody could have shown up that time. Now, granted, nobody was going to beat him up until a certain point, but it worked out. And like you said, okay, fine. If you open championship, what should happen is, all right, fine. I'm going to bring out a big hat with the entire male roster on it, and I want to reach into this hat and pick a name, and that's going to be the title shot. You know, what's wrong with that?
Nothing. Besides, wouldn't it have made a much more effectual story if Damian Priest said, I'm answering the challenge, and Finn Balor confronted him backstage and said, what exactly are you doing? I'm assuming that you're going out there not to try to win the title. I assume you're going out there to try to soften them up for me and Money in the Bank, correct? And Damian Priest could have said, well, I'm going out there to do the best I can against Seth Rollins. If that softens them up for you, that's great. If I end up with the title, you should be as happy for me as I would be happy for you if you won. Wouldn't that have furthered the issue a little bit more and made it a little bit more exciting at least?
It would have, but again, this is the WWE, and, well, they used to do this very well, all right? They used to do this excellently, but not anymore. It's like herky-jerky, and it's like it makes sense sometimes, and it doesn't make sense sometimes, and it's like, you know, you used to be really good at this. What happened?
Yeah, I agree with you. So we got Tommaso Ciampa come out, and he attacks The Miz, leads to a match. Here's my problem. I've met Tommaso Ciampa. I've watched him wrestle on indies. Tommaso Ciampa's a fantastic wrestler. The problem I foresee with him in the WWE is that his gimmick, to an extent, if he has one, has always been he's this tough, sort of ruthless, you know, diehard, almost assassin-type guy, right? And that worked really well in NXT, really well. In the WWE, he's so small that it's a problem. It's just a problem. I'm sorry. You can say it's unfair. You can say it's whatever, but it is what it is, and it's a problem. Because no one is going to take it seriously when he gets in the ring against somebody twice, three times his size, that he's going to be able to maneuver them and outdo them. He's going to fall into the Johnny Gargano trap of great wrestler, but at the end of the day, you know, he's a little bit too small. He's going to fall into that same Chad Gable thing they're doing with him. I don't see Tommaso Ciampa being a guy who's like, well, I'm going to go up against Gunther. And, you know, in NXT, oh boy, right? You would have been salivating at that match. In WWE, the way they're booked, not so much. So I think Ciampa has a place in WWE on the card. I just don't think it's going to be near the top, Todd, because I think his gimmick and his size don't match up well in the WWE.
Oh, you're absolutely right there. Like you said, the Tommaso Ciampa, when he first came up, he's like not even going to make it on the main event status, but maybe a mid card status as a competitor, or just to put, or maybe a lower mid card status.
I think he's probably going to join up with Johnny Gargano and his gang, and they're going to reform that. That's the only thing I can think of that would really help them a little bit. But I don't see Tommaso Ciampa as being a main eventer here, Mike, just for the reasons I named.
Right, that's the thing. And when you put him in the ring, and he makes the Miz look like a giant. You know, the Miz is what, 225 pounds, maybe.
Right.
And Ciampa makes him look like a giant, you know, and I mean, yeah, Miz is what, 40 years old, whatever it is, but he's much bigger, and you can tell he's much bigger. You put the Miz next to Ciampa, and you look at him and you say, okay, the Miz is a wrestler. You know, Gargano is a guy pretending, you know. Yeah, his gimmick does. For the WWE, his gimmick doesn't match the thing. But, you know, you've seen in the movies that you've had smaller people beat the crap out of bigger people, right? But that's in the movies. That's when you know, people like, I don't know, Bruce Lee or what's his name, Rush Hour and whatever, Jackie Chan.
Yeah, Jackie Chan.
Those are small people, but we knew that they were always going to win because that's how it was set up. You can't really.
Yeah, see, but the problem is Ciampa's personality in NXT was almost like, I don't know, how could you put it? He was a little bit psychotic. And he was, like, centrally focused on just hurting his opponent and winning and being the top guy. And he was the guy everybody was, like, a little bit fearful of. You're not going to be fearful of this guy in WWE. It's just not going to happen. That gimmick, I knew when he was doing it, I said, this is working so well in NXT. It's not going to work in WWE. It's just not. And he hasn't really been trying to use that, by the way. To his credit, it's not like he's trying to be that. He hasn't tried to be that. He hasn't talked like that or acted like that at all. In fact, he hooked up with The Miz, right, and was doing that stuff for a while. So to his credit, he hasn't tried to do that. But I think he's been clearly told that that's not going to work here. I just don't know what is going to work. You know, the Dexter Lumis thing, that's not working. The Johnny Gargano thing, that's not working. So they got a little bit of a problem with that, I think. We'll have to see how they overcome it, if they overcome it. Anyway, Katana Chance and Caden Carter go against Sonya Deville and Chelsea Green. I understand that Chance and Carter were tag team champions for a long time. I understand they let them come very close to beating Ronda Rousey and why am I blanking on her name? Wow. Shayna Baszler last week. And I understand they have to bounce them back and give them a win. I understand that. But truthfully, the team with the charisma and the chemistry is probably Sonya Deville. Chelsea Green. I mean, they did that little Chelsea Green spot before the match. It was funny in the parking lot. And I don't know. There's a little more to them than there is to just two really good female athletes. And I think I get it that they have to let them win. They lost last week. They got to win. But, man, I don't know. I don't know if I'd be so quick to throw these two to the Wolves. I don't know if I'd be so quick to throw Chelsea Green and Sonya Deville to the Wolves. There's something there. And just being constant losers and the jabrones, that's not going to get it done, Mike.
Right. You know what this? You know what this Sonya Deville Chelsea Green thing has the smackings of? It has the smackings of Team RK Bro. You know, Sonya Deville is playing it the right way. You know, Green is the comedy ending thing, and Sonya Deville is, look, what can I do? She is what she is. What can I do? Right?
Right. Yeah, and there is a chemistry there. It's working to a certain extent. It's just a matter of they got to get some wins. They got to be taken seriously. Right now, it's not really happening. Now, obviously, we know, being former NXT champions, they have to push that team. And they did start out with a loss, which was bad for them. But, again, there were other teams you could have put in there, so we'll see how that goes. Next up was, let's see, hold on 1 minute, let me get back, there we go. Next up was Indy Shear against Cedric Alexander and Shelton Benjamin. This time Alexander and Benjamin actually got in some offense, not much, but some. And, you know, listen, Indy Shear is not getting any reaction. I wish they would. Because we could really use a team that's like a indestructible sort of a monstrous team to really generate some heat, but they're not. They're not generating that heat. They're trying as hard as they possibly can. I mean, they're looking like they're going out of their way to injure their opponents, but they're just not, I don't know, there's something missing and they're just not getting that heat. The crowd was pretty much dead for this, and I don't know. I don't know if Indy Shear has a major future if they're going to keep up this way, Todd.
Oh, you're absolutely right, Gail. Like you said, Vinny Bashir and Jinder Mahal, when they came out last night, they sound like crickets. They sound like crickets. Like, no reaction,
yeah,
no nothing. No nothing.
Nope. I know. It's sad because on paper, if you told me this is what we're going to do, I'd be like, yeah, that sounds like it would work. But I think they needed to introduce them in a much different way. And I don't know, the act isn't going over. And I'm not sure what they can do to make it go over. I think, Mike, this might be one of those teams that as soon as they lose once, that's going to be it.
That's going to be it, and that's the thing. And to tell you the truth, they took him away from Shanky. Shanky was the guy who was making that thing go, right? You know, Shanky,
yep.
Of all those, besides Jinder, of all those guys he's had under him, Shanky's the one with the most, charisma, right? Yeah, it was comedy, but people were responding to him, right? People liked him. People respected Shanky. Not that they don't respect these other two guys, but they respected Shanky and all that stuff. So, I mean, if you're going to try with something, you know, yeah, I like him this year. I like what they're doing with him, but they're getting crickets. I guarantee you, if they bring Shanky back, and reintroduce him, I think the fans would go nuts for Shanky.
Problem is they might go – see, he was leaning toward going to that face turn, and then nothing ever happened. So I don't know if they could bring him back if they heal and have that work. My thought on Indy Shear is they're like a poor man's Authors of Pain. They're two big guys who are very destructive, and they're portrayed as being extremely brutal and hard to beat, but there's no personality. There's just nothing there. And that is a problem. So I don't know. I don't know if they're going to be able to cut the mustard here in WWE. I guess we'll find out. We then, obviously, we got the Judgment Day coming out. And they were explaining their actions to a certain extent and, you know, what was going on with them and the whole nine yards. And the first thing I can think of is they're trying so hard to make this a team, and they just don't feel like one. They just don't. Finn and Damian Priest never really gelled anyway. Rhea Ripley with the rest, well, you know, I guess she did, but mostly with Dominic. And truthfully, the quicker they just dissolve this, the better, despite the fact that Corey Graves says they're a more powerful team than the Bloodline. Well, maybe now, because there is no Bloodline. But if you wanted to compare them to the Bloodline a few months ago, you've got to be insane. Got to be insane. Anyway, Cody Rhodes is challenged to get himself a couple of guys, which is really, really funny. Dominic, who, it does have to be hard to try to keep track of what you want to say when the fans are just booing you out of the building and you can't even get a word in. But he said, you get a couple of two guys. Pretty funny. Pretty funny. Dominic's not super on the mic. But again, he's up against it because it's probably very hard to concentrate when the fans are literally not letting you talk. He's trying to get in what he wants to say. Anyway, so we know that's going to be the big spot, and obviously it's going to be the main event because we haven't been told there's a main event, so quite obviously we knew who probably was going to be his tag team partners. We also had a segment where Sami Zayn is basically telling Kevin Owens he's a rageaholic and he needs to calm down. I don't know where this is going, but it's not interesting. It's not interesting and it's not funny. I mean, occasionally there's one or two things like that's a little bit funny, but for the most part, it's not funny. And the reason I guess it's not funny is we've never seen anything like this from Kevin Owens before, so why now all of a sudden? And now suddenly Sami Zayn is the voice of reason. Sami Zayn is the Zen. The problem is, without the Bloodline storyline, Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens are fading, and they're fading fast, and they know it. And they're trying anything they can possibly think of to keep this duo interesting and fun and lively and have the fan support. And the fans are going to always support them, but that support has waned as far as the reactions that they're getting, clearly. And it's because they don't have a good storyline. Where's their storyline? Once again, is it supposed to be, Gunther's crew? Come on. Imperium? They've beaten them like dogs two or three times. How many more times? Keep coming back like they're the ones who won. That's not a good storyline. It's not a good storyline at all. So I'm not sure, Mike, what's going on with that duo, but it does appear to me that they're going to have to do something quickly with Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens because I don't think without a storyline this team is going to stay hot for that much longer.
Right. I don't know what they're going to do. And I don't know why. What's up? I like what they did, but again, I didn't get it, and that's the thing. Is as far as Dominic goes, again, this guy is just over, and to the point, the fans need to understand with Dominic, he needs to be able to talk to get his lines out, to get his point across. He needs to be able to talk. Yeah, you want this nuclear heat that he's getting, but he needs to be able to talk.
Absolutely correct, and at this stage of the game, they're really not letting him. It is funny, and I'm sure he's eating it up because he's getting more heat than anybody in a Judgment Day, but when they tell him you do have to go out there and say the following things, it's pretty hard to get it out. Damn hard to get it out. So it's funny to watch him. he's half smirking because he knows he's getting the heat, but then half of him is saying, damn, I can't even get out what I need to say. So we get Matt Riddle versus Ludwig Kaiser. This was probably the best match of the night. Although the feature match was good too, but this was probably the best match of the night. Ludwig Kaiser, very underrated, actually. Good overall worker. There was a couple of hokey spots in here, but not much. Gunther's at ringside with him. We know where this is leading, of course, and we saw very clearly where it is going to lead, and that is obviously Gunther versus Matt Riddle at some point. I'm down with it. I mean, the thing is this. If you are going to do this, you may as well play it to the hilt. And by playing it to the hilt, I mean Matt Riddle is the exact opposite of Gunther. Matt Riddle is a guy who appears to take absolutely zero seriously. Everything is a joke or reminds him of a pop culture reference or something. Gunther is exactly the opposite, who's like laser focused on wrestling and nothing but wrestling. So it would be kind of interesting to see if Matt Riddle can rattle Gunther based on just the nonsense that he speaks. And you could probably get some good promos between those two. To show the difference, to show Gunther saying, look, you're an insult to the sport. You're out here saying this and saying that, and you act like you're 10 years old, and it's disgraceful, and blah, blah, blah. And Matt Riddle could say, well, you know, you have to have three people help you win, and, you know, you have to sneak attack people. How is that not disgraceful? And, you know, make a few Hogan Heroes references. And maybe we'll get a good match out of these two. Maybe we will. I do know that Matt Riddle needs some, no pun intended, needs some rehabbing. He needs some rehabbing as a top contender. And I don't think he's winning, so this isn't really going to help him much. I think they don't have any plans to take that belt off Gunther in the very near future. So we'll see what happens with Matt Riddle. By the way, backstage, he tried to aggravate Kevin Owens a little bit. It kind of half worked, but kind of half didn't. That was kind of funny, Todd. But all in all, I mean, the whole Imperium versus Zayn and Owens thing just really isn't working for me.
Oh, you're absolutely right there. Like you said, this whole thing with the Sami Zayn and everything with Matt Riddle and the Imperium, it's like you said, it's not working for me either. It's just like, okay.
It's just a very, it almost feels like they're stalling because the other one is hurt. And they're just trying to stall for more story. But even when he comes back, they've already been beaten. It's not like they're going to take the tag team titles. We already know they're not going to be the ones to take the tag team titles. If anyone takes these tag team titles back, it's very likely going to be the Usos again. Very likely. Or there could be some transitional thing where Indashir takes it and then we go from there. I don't know. I mean, I'm up for Gunther versus Matt Riddle, Mike, but I don't have any perception that you're going to let Matt Riddle take this.
No, and look, yeah, I'm up for it too because Matt Riddle is a striker, and we know what kind of striker. Yeah, he's not as big. Yeah, he's not as big as what's his name, as Sheamus and Drew McIntyre, but he's a striker. This would have that old school feel to it, these two guys. Yeah, he's not going to win, but it would have that old school feel to it.
Yeah, and I mean, he does have some legit cred as a MMA fighter and things, so that obviously adds to it. So, you know, it's okay. We had the segment with Alpha Academy backstage and Chad Gable trying to show Maxine how to do, I guess, a suplex or whatever it happened to be. You know, it was okay, I guess, that we get the Viking Raiders against Alpha Academy. And again, here's where we start to break down things a little bit. I'm totally against making the Viking Raiders jabrons. I said that. You've given them all these segments. You've given them these big things, the big build-up. they shouldn't be jabrones. But you clearly showed that they were. And once you crossed that line and said, no, these guys are losing to everybody, then if you want to promote Alpha Academy, why are they losing? It just makes everybody look weak. You're not making anybody look strong. That's the problem. I may personally think the Viking Raiders deserve to be, booked strong. But if you've decided you don't want them to be booked strong and you want to run with the Alpha Academy, fine. But then you can't have the Viking Raiders beat Alpha Academy then. Because now it just likes two jabron teams instead of one jabron team and another team moving itself up in the rank, right? Not what it looks like. So because they were distracted by Maxine giving Valhalla the suplex, they lose. Chad Gable loses. And there seems to be this thing, I don't know, I thought for a while they were going to go like Maxine and Chad Gable have something going on, but it appears that they may still be going with the Otis thing, I'm not sure. I don't know where this is. They've changed her character a lot. So it's a little bit confusing. I just automatically thought the Viking Raiders were going to lose again. I just automatically thought that's the way it's going to be because you're trying to build up Alpha Academy and you obviously have no plans for the Viking Raiders. So I scratched my head on this one because if you make everybody 50-50, nobody's any good. That's the problem. Now, I would never have made the Viking Raiders 50-50. The Viking Raiders would have been about 80-20. Both of those guys can really move. They can really go. They're big guys. Sarah Logan looks fantastic as this new character. She's doing a good job. You could have really – they're a hell of a lot more charismatic than Indus Shear. I don't know. I was really shocked when Chad Gable lost this match, Tom. I really thought Alpha Academy would go over.
Yeah, and it's not only 50-50 booking, but it's lazy. And you're making – you know, after bringing the Viking Raiders back – and you give them this new, you give them Valhalla, you give them this new look, you call them the new and vicious Viking Raiders, and it's just back to the same old, you know, might as well go back to calling them the Viking Experience, because it's just, they're just absolutely lackluster, and it's a shame because they're probably one of the strongest tag teams they have if they did it right. And to move on from Chad Gable and Otis, because it's not working for me. I can't really speak for, you know, anybody else, but I think we hold the consensus, you know, this is not working.
I think it can work because I think both Chad Gable and Otis are very, very charismatic, and I think they can get it over. It's just that where are you going with it? First, you're telling me, well, he's getting Maxine prepared, and he's really good at it, and she's starting to get to where she could get in the ring and really defend herself because Chad Gable is, in fact, a very good coach. Then you say, well, he's such a lousy wrestler, he's so easily distracted that he gets pinned. Now, when you had Alpha Academy as the jabrons, I understood. The gimmick was supposed to be Chad Gable thinks he's better than he is. He thinks he can coach everybody, but he's the guy who always loses. Otis is going to get sick of the fact and say, well, wait a minute. If you're so great, how come you never win? How come you're always the one getting the pin and I'm the one who's standing on the apron? Thought they were going with that and probably flip-flop Otis again. They decided not to do that. They decided to go in the direction of making them both fan favorites. And then I thought the direction was, they're bringing in Maxine. There's going to be some sort of a love interest between one of them. He's going to train her and get her really, really, really solid in the ring. She's going to be a very good hand at the third wheel, sort of, in the Alpha Academy. And no, they're not doing that either. So I'm not even really sure where this is going, Mike. It seems to be going nowhere.
It's going nowhere, but at least he taught her the suitcase, but I don't think It's like the thing that happened last week. It didn't come off like the one he taught her. What she did is more of a snap suplex.
Yes.
All right.
Yes.
'Cause it was quick. Right. You know. So they wanted. I think the goal when they went in the back was to teach her she's running the mill, suplex, I don't want to say delayed vertical, but that your normal suplex. It turned out to be a snap suplex, which looked better. Actually, it looked better than what she did last week.
Yeah, definitely. I'm just a little confused about where it's going. I mean, I guess you're trying to start a longer-term feud between Alpha Academy and the Viking Raiders. Well, that's fine, but then let's not do this 50-50 right now. Let's do this a different way. Let's do some double disqualifications, double countouts, that kind of stuff that leads to a more aggressive match. These matches are... It almost seems like we're only having the match so that we can get to the part where Maxine does a move. Okay. Well, I'm not sure where that leads. So I'm not a really big fan of it. I wish they would do something more with either Viking Raiders or Alpha Academy. Take your pick. But right now they're not. So we have Shinsuke Nakamura taking on Bronson Reed. Shinsuke Nakamura, say what you want about him. I know there's some people who really, really love him. I know there's some people who say he's overrated. The one thing about Shinsuke Nakamura is he has a ton of just personal charisma. The minute he comes out, he just commands your attention, even though he does the same thing every time. See, that's the thing. It's not like he does anything special. But he's just a guy that he just has it. He has that intangible whatever it is. And when you're in the ring with Bronson Reed, who does not have that, and sitting at ringside is Ricochet, who also does not have that, it even shows more. Decent match between Shinsuke and Bronson Reed. A really weird segment where Ricochet was asking Shinsuke Nakamura to hit him, said, come on, I wish you would take a shot at me. I don't know. Where's that going? A three-way, I guess? At some point, but it didn't do Ricochet any favors because it made Ricochet look like a little crybaby Karen. So I'm not sure that did him any favors. I did see this, which is encouraging. When Bronson Reed climbed up that rope to do his finisher splash, fans were standing on their feet. That's the one thing he's got that people are impressed with. It's going to go away pretty soon because at first when you see a guy that size do that, you're like, whoa. But then when you see it 40 times, it's not so impressive. Out of everybody in here, certainly Shinsuke Nakamura is the one who has that intangible something. I think we're going to lead to some kind of a three-way dance at some point here, Todd, and it'll be interesting to see who they decide to let win that.
You're absolutely right, Dale. Like you said, this is going to probably lead to like a triple threat match. Or something. Whoever probably is for for bragging rights or something. That would be something.
I guess they're just setting it up so these guys have something to do, that the fans will care about. Personally, I'd rather just see Shinsuke Nakamura and Ricochet in a match alone. But I guess they're throwing in Bronson Reed there for the the power mic. So that's okay.
It's okay. And look, the thing that he does off the ropes, that splash that he does off the ropes, it kind of reminds me of the fact when Vader used to do the moonsault. But the thing with Vader and the moonsault is Vader did that rarely, right? He did it rarely.
Yeah.
And when he did it, it was always an ooh and ah thing because this is a 340-pound guy that can do that. And I'm pretty sure if you allowed Otis to do something like that, he could get it over and he could do it. But he doesn't do it. I don't want to say they allow it, but he doesn't do it. Yet none yet, and he probably won't do it, but that's the thing. When guys that big can do that, and he's not like the other guy, the the guy from the rap group, you know, that couldn't get the big guy that couldn't
top
get
dollar,
his,
yeah.
you know, top dollar, couldn't get himself over the ropes. No, this guy can come off the ropes in that way. It's just that, can you find another finisher for this guy to where he doesn't all the time have to use that? Because remember, it's gonna go the way, I don't want to say go the way of, but it's gonna go the same way that Neville did when he did the his finisher party.
Yep, I could not agree with you more. He needs a different finisher, so he doesn't do that all the time. The idea behind it is, well, we want the fans to see him do it all the time because the fans expect to see him do it. Well, too bad, because you're right. It's going to get old quick, and that is a problem. We had, of course, Rhea Ripley and a re-challenging with Natty that didn't even turn into a match. There's something going on. There's some storyline going on with Natty. I'm not really sure what that storyline is. But it's obvious that she's hit rock bottom and she doesn't know whether she belongs in the WWE anymore. And at the same time, it's strengthening Rhea Ripley's character. So I don't really have a problem with this. One of the first things they've done with Natty in a very long time that I'm at least mildly interested in, because there's obviously a payoff somewhere. Natty's not looking like a horse's ass every single week for zero reason. So something's going to happen. I'm not exactly sure what that something is, but something's going to happen here. Whether it involves Rhea Ripley or not, I do not know. But it's going to involve Natty, that's for sure. Now, what is interesting and did catch my attention and I did think was good writing was they had Rhea Ripley come backstage when there was an interview going on. And she took on, well, she snuck up on Raquel Rodriguez. And now Raquel Rodriguez, prior to this, had been watching what happened with Natty on the monitor. And she had told the announcer, irregardless to whatever, competition's competition, what she just did, is that's unacceptable. And I hope I win the Money in the Bank thing, because if I do, I'm coming after her. And then Rhea Ripley attempted to intimidate her and said, what did I just hear? And instead of being intimidated, which normally happens with Rhea Ripley, she actually stood up and Rhea Ripley realized she's actually bigger than me. She's actually quite a bit bigger than me. And she said, she repeated it, and Rhea Ripley looked like the one that was slightly intimidated when Raquel Rodriguez walked off. Good writing. A good way to promote Raquel Rodriguez, one of the better aspects of the show this week, because it's the first time we've seen Rhea Ripley kind of stared down in a way that she normally does to other competitors, Todd, Tom. No, Tom is not there. I don't know what's going on with Tom's phone. Let's go to Mike. Mike, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I know what you mean. And this is a really good bit of logic here. You know, you look at, you know, yeah, she's a big girl. Yeah, Rhea Ripley's a big girl, but she's not Rodriguez. You know, Rhea Ripley may be, what, 5'9", 5'10", you know, 125 pounds, 130 pounds. Rodriguez is, what, 6 foot? And probably 180 pounds, and most of it muscle, right? And yeah. It's like, you yeah. don't get that. You don't get her looking that like she's small. Now, granted, you know, you look at her versus Charlotte Flair. They're about the same size. They're about the same height. You know, it's an even matchup. Even you look at her versus what's her name? The EST. They're about the same size. They're about maybe she's a little bit taller than the EST, but the EST is really, really muscular, right? So
yeah, and the thing is too, they're promoting them differently. I mean, like Charlotte, you'd say, well, Charlotte might be close to equally as strong as Rhea, maybe not quite as strong as Rhea, but much more technically sound. Much more experienced, much more technically sound, much more dangerous. far as her ability to pin you or make you submit. With Raquel Rodriguez, it's not experience because she doesn't have as much. With Raquel Rodriguez, she actually may be more powerful. And Rhea Ripley's not experienced that. Rhea Ripley hasn't been in with anybody who could literally just say, well, I can out-muscle you. And they showed that when they had their qualifying match with Trish Stratus, and she literally was shaking Trish Stratus like a rag doll. When Corey Graves said, you know, basically she's killing her, it looked like she was killing her. She was shaking her like a bear, shaking, a tree. And she was throwing her around the ring like she was a lawn dart. And they purposely wanted to put that in there because what they're doing is they're showing you, you've seen Rhea Ripley's power, and she's powerful, but look what this girl can do. And she's throwing people around like literally they're a doll. And that's what they wanted to do. Obviously, that is coming up. Rhea Ripley versus Raquel Rodriguez is going to come up quite soon. And I'm very interested in that match. Raquel Rodriguez will not win that match, but I'm very interested in that match because I think it's going to be the first time they're going to ask Rhea Ripley to sell that she's not as powerful as her opponent. So that should be kind of fun to watch. Now, as far as this match is concerned, this is a train wreck. And here's why it's a train wreck. I know they want Trish Stratus in there because they want to stack the deck against Becky Lynch. So I knew they wanted Trish Stratus in that Money in the Bank match. She can't beat Raquel Rodriguez as far as pinning her because that would ruin the Rhea Ripley thing, right? So now they have to settle on, well, Becky Lynch is going to come down and cause a disqualification. Well, I would love to know how she caused a disqualification when she never stepped foot in the ring. In that case, Rhea Ripley would be disqualified every single time. The Judgment Day would be disqualified, or Dominic would be disqualified, because Rhea Ripley gets up on the ring apron even, and the referee just tells her, get down. She didn't attack Trish Stratus. Trish Stratus got out of the ring, gets out of the ring and gets attacked. How many times did you see Rhea Ripley powerbomb Kevin Owens and hit somebody else or distract somebody else? Has the Judgment Day ever been disqualified? No, because it's outside the ring. She's not interfering in the match. Becky Lynch causes the disqualification for Raquel Rodriguez, and so by default, Trish Stratus is in there. What the hell are the rules? I mean, I don't know. They're just arbitrary rules. So I hated the ending of this. Absolutely hated the ending. If you really wanted this to work, Becky Lynch got to get in the ring. The reason they didn't want her to get in the ring is because they'd say, well, now you know that she knows that that would cause an instant disqualification, so she basically just thumbed her nose at Raquel Rodriguez, and that's not something that a face would do. So you're presented with that problem. Stratus should have hauled her in the ring. Trish Stratus should have grabbed her by the hair, and the referee didn't see it, and once she's in the ring, then she's disqualified. That's all. Because Trish Stratus getting out of the ring and confronting Becky Lynch should not cause a disqualification. It just shouldn't. It never has. Now, to be fair, Becky Lynch acts like the face that she is and says, oh, my God, what did I do? I got her disqualified. But then on top of it, she realizes I really screwed myself. Because now both of these members of the team, their little clique, are going to be in this Money in the Bank ladder match against me. And later on she says, well, what did I do? I just screwed myself. That's what I did. Yeah, I mean, that's an okay. I get the premise and I like it. I just think you could have got to it in a much better way, Todd, because I've never heard of anybody being disqualified for just something they did outside the ring.
Well, you're absolutely right there. Like you said, I never saw anything like that either. And disqualified for somebody then didn't even get in the ring or for anything. And normally, if you get disqualified because the other person comes in, interferes, that's be going in the ring and try to distract or try to get involved and get the other person disqualified inside the ring.
Yeah, I mean, Mike, how many times have we seen somebody run to the rescue of somebody and beat up somebody on the outside of the ring, and then the other guy gets out and they're fighting? There's no disqualification. They haven't interfered in the match yet. They haven't set foot in the ring.
Right, and this is another thing that logic goes out the window with, right? Logically, if you get out the ring and you go confront somebody, then how's that a disqualification? If anything,
exactly.
You go out, you roll out the ring to go confront somebody, and your opponent's still in the ring, what the referee should do is just start counting.
Yes,
you made
absolutely.
The decision to go out, and
yes.
And that would be the logical thing. The referee sits there and counts you. You're sitting there confronting. Maybe you're ignoring the referee, and it counts you out. How is it not your fault for rolling out the ring, right?
Absolutely 100% correct. That's what I had said before. I said this should be a count out, if anything. I don't know how this is a disqualification. Just, again, what the hell are the rules? They're just arbitrary. So then we get to the main event, and we have the Judgment Day versus Cody Rhodes and Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens. Good match. Really, really surprised to see Damian Priest take the pin again. Taking the pin a lot. For a guy that they said, well, you know, after the Bad Bunny match, we're going to really promote him. He's taking the pin a lot. Now, I don't know. Maybe he'll pull down that Money in the Bank briefcase so they don't care. But right now he's taking the pin a lot. Good overall match. After the match, Brandi Rhodes had tweeted that somebody has to stand up to Rhea Ripley. Please, please, God, do not let it be Brandi Rhodes. If Brandi Rhodes comes in here and in any way, shape, or form confronts Rhea Ripley and doesn't have get herself completely dusted, if she actually fights back and does well against Rhea Ripley or whatever, I don't know, Mike, what you built up Rhea Ripley for then.
I don't know. I mean, now, if somebody like, you know, what's her name comes in there and does it, if he enlists Raquel Rodriguez, Gonzalez Rodriguez, whatever, to do it, I'm fine with that, you know. And speaking, one other thing about Raquel Rodriguez, that corkscrew elbow drop that she does, that she uses basically as her finisher, they need to find something else. Yeah, she's a great athlete. She can do that, but that's going to get old.
Yeah, and she's a power wrestler. I don't know why she doesn't just do a power move. So anyway, that's how Raw ended. Damian Priest takes the pinfall to Cody Rhodes. Okay. You know, I guess it's okay. The one thing I want to talk about before we end the show is the Logan Paul thing, because it irritated me more than anything else on the show last night. What you're basically saying to your fans is this: while everyone else in that dressing room who is 100% full-time professional wrestlers have to earn their way into Money in the Bank by defeating an opponent, Logan Paul, a talk show host, in here and instantly be given the privilege. I have no goddamn idea how you think that's logical, how you think that's good, or how you can justify it. I know it's a gimmick. I get it. Oh, I'm so important, I automatically get in. I get that. I get the gimmick. But the gimmick itself is derogatory. Why wouldn't every single wrestler say, this is bullshit? If he can be in it, well, why can't Bronson Reed? Bronson Reed's beaten both guys who are in it. At least he could say, I beat two guys that are in this Money in the Bank match. How come I don't get another chance? But Logan Paul does. You know why? I'll tell you why. Because they realize this field is so weak that there's only like two people could win it. Obviously, LA Knight can win it, and obviously, Damian Priest can win it. That's it. And they said, well, maybe, just maybe, if we put Logan Paul in there, people will say, well, he could win it. He's had championship matches before. Hey, if Logan Paul was there, why didn't he challenge Seth Rollins? The whole episode was very, very illogical. Very illogical. However, it wasn't the worst episode I've seen. There were some interesting matchups. There were some good moments in it. So I'm not gonna crush it this week. But the Logan Paul thing, Mike, I mean, how much sense does that make?
Right. It doesn't make any sense. But the one thing I want to see with the advancement of this whole Chad Gable thing is what is going to be the next thing that he tries to teach her.
Yeah, it'll be kind of interesting. I mean, I guess they're going to keep doing it to the Viking Raiders because Sarah Logan's the only one who I guess will take. I don't know what's going on. I really don't know what's going on. Best thing in the show, probably the beginning that supposedly Vince McMahon wrote. Made Finn Balor look very vicious. It made Finn Balor look very determined. It made me a little more interested in seeing this match than I had been, so that's good. And I won't say it went downhill from there because they had a good match. Matt Riddle and Kaiser had a good match, and the feature match was a good match. And I did like the Raquel Rodriguez exchange with Rhea Ripley. So for that reason, I'm going to give it a flat C. I'll give it a C+. I think it was a little bit better than a C. I'm going to give it a C+, Mike. What's your thoughts?
He said B, right?
C+.
D. I'm going to give it a little bit better than that. I'm going to say a C-.
Okay. Yeah, I give it a C+. C. So yours is a little bit worse than
C minus for me. But I didn't think it was all that bad. I mean, look, I can see where they're going with Maxine. I just wish that it wasn't against Sarah Logan, you know?
Yeah, they are really wasting what could potentially be one of your better women wrestlers. And that's not coming from me. That's coming from AJ Styles. I mean, I think AJ Styles would know. And when that mass release happened, back when the COVID thing was going on, the very first person AJ Styles said, "Oh, that was probably a mistake," was Sarah Logan. So take it from him, not me. Todd, what's your rating this week?
I'm going to give it a C+ as well.
So it wasn't the worst show in the world. It was okay. I mean, it had some very illogical things. You're going to have to get used to that with the WWE because it is an illogical federation. They do things that are just not logical. One thing I did want to mention before we close is that after Collision on Saturday, reports are that some of the ticket sales for AEW did pick up a little bit. They did reduce the prices of the tickets, though. And they were doing ticket packages where if you bought like four, it averaged out to about $16 a ticket. So they did lower the prices, but they did somewhat increase their ticket sales. So we'll keep an eye on that for you. And we will be back here on Friday with the weekly wrap-up. Thanks for listening.
You're listening to Wrestling Chat Radio.